Who are you?
Well, I love this question. Particularly, this is my specialty subject. If I was to go on a quiz show, this would be the stuff I'd like to be asked. There are different ways of looking at it. From the spiritual perspective, the way that I work and the system that I use, I'm a creator. I'm a creator, thinker, spiritualist soul type. And that means, obviously, that I have creativity. I'm a bit of a deep thinker, maybe a warrior. And I have a kind of spiritual side to, at least that part of me is about finding meaning in this life. And beyond that, I have different missions, different reasons for being here. One of them is all about love. It's all about healing the heart chakra. That's actually something we share. You're also here to bring some love into the world. I'm also working through past life fear of rejection. It's an issue that's come up in other incarnations. That's another one we share. And in fact, interestingly, I find that a lot of podcasters are working through issues around rejection by bringing people together. It's being a uniter. But I'm digressing back to who am I?
Oh, it's all good.
And beyond that, I was actually contemplating something last night, which is just, like we have strengths and weaknesses based on who we are and what we've chosen, what we brought into this world. And I am just really comfortable. I was sitting there last night just playing my guitar and just thinking, yeah, this is the sort of stuff that comes relatively easily to me. I can play guitar, I can paint, I can do anything creative, I can write. But practicality, oh my God. I mean, I literally can't. I mean, my wife won't even let me do a DIY around the house because it's just going to be a disaster. It's like, if she's that in with COVID. A screwdriver, she runs. And I used to think there's something wrong with me because that was a message I got when I was growing up. Why can't you be more practical? Why can't you be more this? Why can't you be more that? And of course, when I learned all this stuff and, but that we all come in here with a personality and a plan and all of that sort of thing, it was massively affirming, to know, well, I'm never going to be that guy who fixes his own car. I love cars, but I know nothing about them. And I never will, because there is no point. I'm never going to be good. We have talents and abilities. All talents and abilities are past life related. Whatever you're good at, there's something you did in a past life that helped you develop that skill. But conversely, if you didn't have anything in a past life to help you learn something, it's going to be a real uphill struggle in this life. Mm. So
why don't you just for some content?
Sorry.
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, in the way that, in a sense, everybody could learn to play violin. But some people are going to be a hell of a lot better and they're going to do it a lot quicker, and other people are going to spend 50 years and still sort of scratch away at it. It really is a question of what skills and talents you're able to bring in.
Yeah. It's so interesting because I've been so excited to have this conversation because I imagine you would confirm this. I know that everyone has experiences around either they'll actually say these words. My wife says this all the time where, she'll say something like, I feel like in a past life I was addicted to drugs or overdosed or something. Cause like anytime she's around any of that kind of like, and even watching a movie where the plot is around, drug use, she gets very uncomfortable and she doesn't, she doesn't use any drugs. I don't really think ever, frankly. But like I feel there's so many examples like that. I have my own as well that I was so, and it turns out there seems to be something behind that, right? Like most people don't know or educated on that. But why don't you set Ainsley some context around what is it that you do present day and maybe share that experience of when you encountered your uncle in the, was it a bookshop?
Yes, it was. Yeah. A bookshop in Hawaii.
Okay.
And interestingly, he spent most of his adult life very close to where you are. He was in Toronto. Visited him a few times there. I tell the story all the time. For me, it was like it was huge. It changed my life entirely. I actually think of my life in two halves. One was up until this moment, which was only about a second long, but and then it's from there on. It's like two halves. I was on a trip to Hawaii. I'd moved to the west coast of the States. I mean, originally from Scotland, and then, you know, long series of events, but ended up on the west coast. And I lived in a lot of places, and I never felt I belonged, never felt comfortable. But I'd always been interested in Hawaiian culture, which is a past life thing. So I took a trip there. I was in this bookstore, walking around Borders Bookstore in Lihue, and I felt really odd. It was maybe, you know, early morning. I had coffee in my hand, and I'm kind of going, there's something weird. I don't know what's going on. It was not, you know, drugs or alcohol or anything. It was just like but I was in a sort of altered state. It was very weird. And then I just sort of turned a corner and ran into my uncle, which was extraordinary because he'd been dead for about 10 years at that point. So, you know, I was not expecting to see him.
And yeah,
it was real. It was like it's solid, three-dimensional, but only there for about a second. I mean, maybe 2 seconds maximum. Don't even that. It was very, very quick, but unmistakable. And there was a message from him about working together. And now at that point, I think probably half a dozen psychics had told me that my uncle was a spirit guide and he wanted to work with me. And I didn't really pay much attention. I mean, I was starting on this to get interested spiritually, but I was also, I'd always been a firm non-believer, and so was he. He was an atheist. And so, you know, I was kind of just thinking, well, two things. One, I can't imagine him being a spirit guide because of his, in the last life he had, it was, you know, he wasn't open to that sort of thing. But also because I felt like my life had been kind of chaotic, and I thought, well, I don't think I have a spirit guide. I don't think I'm getting any help from the other side.
Yeah, yeah.
Of course, you know, completely ignoring my contribution to the chaos that I was creating.
Because yeah. So, you were an artist, right? At that time, what kind of art were you doing?
Yeah, I was.
Were you involved in?
I was an illustrator, cartoon illustrator. So, you know, I did things like Chester Cheetah for the Cheetos packs and stuff like that. You know,
yeah, that's
what
fun. I'll
be remembered for. I did other work. I mean, stuff I'm maybe a little more proud of, but it's not as mainstream. But people know that sort of thing. But that was the sort of style that I worked in, and I did that for about 20 years, and then so I had this, you know, epiphany. Actually, for me, it was a second big epiphany. I'd had another one probably about 6 months before. That was when I went to the West Coast and I heard this voice of the psychic who told me like a decade before, you're going to end up in California. And I protested and he said, there's nothing you can do about it. And I actually re-experienced that on my first night in San Francisco. So, you know, I was getting a lot, the looking back, the spirit world was really they're going to great lengths to try and get me to wake up and pay attention. Well, the other thing I kept hearing from psychics was that I was psychic and I should be doing something with it. So getting this validation from my uncle was great. A few days later, I was back in the mainland. And I felt very self-conscious, but I just kind of sat there and I went, okay, if you're there, talk to me. And yeah. I still can't describe what it's like because it's not like a voice in the ear. But it's a sort of knowing, and there's no question that I'm getting messages, and I was able to ask a lot of questions and get a lot of validation, things about family, things about experiences of his that I knew. So it was a really good start to me doing psychic work. So I, with the encouragement of the spirit world, actually what he did was turn me on to these other spirit guides, they're on a different level. And I started working with them and being guided to work as a psychic, it wasn't very clear to begin with exactly what I would do. I tried a few different things and different methods, different clairs, clair audience is the main sort of thing, but it's also clair sentience, and I get visuals often as well. So it was a sort of time of experimentation for me. Mm.
But you felt like at that time you had like the, I guess you had enough signs leading up to that when you even for a split second saw your uncle physically in a way, like, oh, yeah, that tempered enough of the skepticism or whatever, you know, whatever was blocking you before, like, okay, now it's time to like take this seriously or explore, yeah, I guess you could say, right?
No, but that was really exactly, yeah, it I just needed that one more shove to, yeah, kind of dive into doing it.
Wow, well, that definitely would be it. Were you what was the feeling when you saw him?
Gosh, I mean, it's weird because, you know, I've seen ghosts and spirits before, and since, and people have often asked me, were you scared? Are you frightened?
Yeah.
No, you know, and so there certainly wasn't anything, shocking. I mean, apart from like, holy cow, I just saw my uncle. It was a feeling actually of, I think, comfort, like that very real sense that there's something beyond. You know, I couldn't have made that up. There were even other weird things that happened just 10 minutes before all this that I look back on and I go, that was so far from coincidence. Yeah. Actually, if you don't mind, I can share very quickly what that was.
Of course, yeah.
Same bookshop, so just like maybe 5 minutes before I ran into my uncle. Like I say, I felt in a very strange altered state. I wasn't even paying attention to what section I was in, and I just reached out and I took a book off the shelf, and it was by a guy named Hans Holzer. It was a paranormal investigator stories. His stories of paranormal investigation. And I opened the book on a particular page, and I looked straight at the bottom right, and there are the names of two of my parents' closest friends. And I'm going, this is weird. And I read the story. It was there was a woman in the States who did, at night she had a Scottish young woman who'd ghost that would perch at the end of her bed and talk to her and give her place names and the whole story of how she died. And the only Scottish people that he knew happened to be my parents' friends. So he contacted them, and they actually visited the location where this ghost had died, this person had died a couple hundred years ago, and were able to validate a load of stuff. But that in itself was weird because it wasn't like flicking through the book. It was just opening up right to the page and my eyes being drawn to that one line. So, yeah, there was no question that the reason I felt like I was in this altered state was that the spirit world was really coming through in that moment, or that half hour maybe. But that really, really got my attention. And it was sort of so unmistakable. There was just no going back. Like, you know, I went from being an atheist to now I talk to spirits in other dimensions all the time. So, it really was life transforming for me.
Wow. And I know you've at the beginning, and you alluded to this, you experimented in kind of different areas and so forth, and seem to be landed or guided to, I don't even know how to describe this. I mean, you obviously you can do it better than me, so I'll let you do it. But what I'll say is you've been led to exploring past lives and helping those in the physical realm, you know, better understand that. I mean, that's obviously what I'd love to do through our interview, but maybe just set some context of like, what are we actually talking about here for someone that might be tuning in and said, like, what are these guys, like, what is going on? I mean, the audience on this show are, I would say, for the most part, pretty open, because we've explored so many different topics when it comes to, you know, I think just showing up in our lives with a little bit more grace, a little bit more ease, and a lot of that has to do with the mind and so forth. So they're pretty open and curious bunch. But yeah, I'd love to hear from you a description, I guess, of what you do and what that, I guess, what we could be paying attention to.
I think very simply put, I help people to figure out who they are and why they're here, and release any blocks to being who they are by discovering their past lives. When I started doing the work, I was, the thing that really intrigued me that I was always curious about was people's beliefs and so on. You know, what makes us so different? You know, why is one person like a, you know, gun-toting right-winger and somebody else is a, you know, peace-loving Buddhist or whatever. I was always you know, fascinated by what makes us who we are. So it was a very easy thing to move into that, to work with the spirit guides to help people discover their personalities, their reasons for being here. And then very quickly, as I started doing the work, I began doing more and more past life stuff. It was past lives came up more and more. And the thing that I found really fascinating was that by discovering a past life experience or block, that I could help people blow through fears and limiting beliefs, and even physical ailments that have they're nothing to do with this life. They just have been triggered in some way. They're memories. You know, you talked about addiction earlier, and I couldn't wait to talk about that because that's something, you know, there are certain ways that experiences show up that you can very easily predict. For example, if you've died and drugs and alcohol were a feature, you know, maybe you died from an overdose of pills and alcohol, say, well, your soul is going to be triggered by any representation of that in a movie, TV, reading about it, or other people's experiences, because it's not just abstract. It's your personal experience that you're witnessing. And now the soul also doesn't want to go the same way again. So very often people who get sick with one drink or hangover with two drinks or refuse to take pills, it's because they've died as a result of these substances, or where they're a kind of feature, you know, where they're maybe contributed in some way. So the soul goes, oh, not on my watch. So it tries to purge it. Sometimes it can even be connected to that blood-brain barrier. A lot of people that I've talked to, when I've seen that they've died from taking some kind of medicine, like, there's so many medicines we took in the past that did more harm than good. And things like mercury for syphilis or something like that. But I find that for most people who've had an experience of medicine that was supposed to help them ending up killing them, then in this life, the soul basically won't let the medicine work because it associates then all meds with high risk. So the one thing that I see so often is people having to take extra lidocaine or Novocaine or whatever you take at dentists, because the moment that stuff goes into the body, the soul, which exerts a lot of control over the body, is trying to push it out. And
interesting.
So yeah, I've had people say, a lot of people say they have to take twice as much, even four times as much. Crazy stuff.
Because is the idea that, given like kind of where we're at in the current, I guess, our physical society, like where we are in the place of time, that at this point we've all lived thousands of versions of a physical life, and then I'm oversimplifying here, but I think I pulled this out of your book. You said something like human souls originated some 55,000 years ago at a time when our species were mostly still living in Africa. It was then that the Homo sapiens underwent a radical shift in consciousness, one that would alter our entire future. Our giant leap resulted in us becoming the creatures of virtually unlimited reason and creativity that we are now. So is it like from that period that all of a sudden give all the flavor? I'm trying to remember the audience. Maybe many of the audience probably haven't read your work, so I'm biased because I know a bit of the backstory. But from that period that our souls are coming to this physical world to basically learn lessons, and there's a certain amount. I don't know if it's the same amount of time or if it's just purely that we've learned the amount of lessons that we're supposed to learn, that then, you know, that experiment or that work is done. But it's like thousands of these reincarnations, essentially, right? I feel like I'm confusing myself. Why don't you give us the easy version of what I'm trying to say?
Allow me to unconfuse you. None of us would have thousands of incarnations, although our species got this kind of elevated consciousness roughly 55,000 years ago. Even the oldest souls that are on the planet right now wouldn't go back more than 5 or 6,000 years, maybe 7,000 years, just to go back and forth between here and the astral plane, experiencing life here, processing it, planning, which is what we do on the other side. When I say the other side, I mean the astral plane. It's our sort of home away from home. Actually, a lot of old souls, when I tell them they're old souls and this could be their last life, they say, oh, I just want to go home. I've heard that so many times. It's really interesting. People actually feel that, you know, that the other side is more familiar in a way.
So what is the astral plane, just so for people that don't know what that is?
The astral plane is just it's another dimension, but it's where we go when we die. And the process over there is about, when we go over there, you hear people who've had near-death experiences talk about this, where there's a kind of life review, and you're able to learn so much from that because you feel the experiences of other people, those you've interacted with as well. So any hurts that you've imposed on other people, you'll feel it yourself, and of course all the good stuff too. Mm-hmm. But that really helps you to grow. And once you're there, you plan what you still need to learn. There is this sort of myth that to be a really old soul and get out of here finally, that you have to be perfect. I work with spirit guides who say if perfection was a goal, we'd all be here forever. It's just really making sure you've learned enough. And really the soul's journey, which is usually over something like maybe say 110, 120 lifetimes, that would roughly be as many lives as you need to get to the end. Although it's difficult because that means you're not counting lives. There's a lot of infant mortality in the past, a lot of failed lives. And so if you counted those, I mean, of course, the number would be much larger. Yeah. But in my experience, it's been roughly, you know, very much oldest souls that I talk to might be on life 115 or something. It gives you an idea of how long it would take to get from the beginning to the end. So I talk a lot about young and old souls because, of course, if you have old souls, you have to have young souls too. And we've all gone through the process. It's just like coming into this world as a child and growing old. Same sort of principle. And really what we're here to learn are our higher core values. And that's why you see older souls tend to be more pacifistic. They're more concerned about others rather than just themselves. I talk about the journey being from a place of me to we, place of fear to love. And the older the soul gets, generally, the more open they are, the more open the heart chakra can become. But we're all seeking these to ultimately embody these higher core values like peace, truth, love, understanding, knowledge, equality. And younger souls, unfortunately, there's so many of them in positions of power these days, which is not a lot of fun for the older souls amongst us. It's a very hard time to be here on the planet. Especially all the greed and exploitation. These are younger souls who just haven't learned these lessons that we're all in this together and we should be sharing a little bit more than we do, and so on. But part of that is these younger souls just well, not only do they not have the experience, but they haven't had enough experience of reincarnation to really understand it. Because if you know you're coming back, and that you're probably going to be a better steward of the earth and more concerned about the world you live in, rather than just exploiting and taking what you can. Younger souls often, you don't get a lot of young souls talking about reincarnation and past lives. In 27 years of reading people, I've never had a young soul come to me. They just are not interested in this sort of thing. They're much more kind of mainstream.
That's so interesting. And where are you getting, where are you getting all of this information? Like, was there just a big download, from the point that you had that experience seeing your uncle, where you saw what was actually happening? And obviously I know you were communicating with these various spirit guides, but it seemed, and also everyone listening, this is what started me down this journey. I want to say it was end of last year, but I had someone on the show that had a near-death experience, and it was just quite profound to hear about it. And then that sent me down this rabbit hole. And you know how the algorithms work in the social media world. Like, YouTube just kept feeding me these near-death experiences. And I'm preaching to you, you already know this, but the commonalities are so profound. And you already described kind of what, the life review. And most people that I've heard these stories from, they actually don't want to come back here, because it's just the feeling of love, and that there was no fear, there's no worry and anxiety wherever they land. And it's just so consistent across every kind of case that is shared, that it's hard not to believe, right? Anyway, I encourage people to go down that rabbit hole, because it's hard not to not see what you're experiencing. But I guess back to my question, how did that all show up for you, that you got this seems like a big wealth of a download, then able to do the work that you're doing today?
It was a download. Okay. It wasn't immediately after I started doing this. So I spent 3 years practicing, working with my spirit guides. I make light of this, but they were kind of going, are you ever going to read people? Get out and do it. But I had some very big fears that I had to work through. And, not least was letting the world know I was a psychic. That was a tough one. Psychics don't in the main have such a great reputation, or since associated with, fraudulence. And so I was very reluctant even to use the word psychic. So it took me quite a while to get to that point. Something that helped me was reading out of a shop, forced to bare my soul, reveal myself. It was a very tough way of doing it, but I'm very glad that I did. So I'd been reading people for a while, and then my spirit guides gave me the system that I use, the instructions, but what they gave me. It's a way of looking at our lifelines. There's all different ways of doing it. It's not like my way is any better or whatever. It's just different. So there's lots of other ways you can figure out things, but it's a system. And so I look, when I work with people, I look at how old their soul is. For example, you're in this last life at level 9. There's only 10 levels in all. This means you're well into that sort of senior citizen category in soul terms. And it's going to
Is that why I have gray hair?
That's why you got gray hair. That explains everything, right?
Right.
Yeah. So
finally,
this is meant to be a busy life. You're meant to be getting a lot done. You had a short past life before this one, and your soul is for that reason, it's trying to make up for things. And also, there was abandonment in the past life, and so this is an interesting thing that I found with podcasters, that I think every podcaster that I've spoken with is working through a past life issue or a rejection and abandonment by being a uniter, being the person to bring people together. So you are creating a following, and that helps people who share that same thing where they may feel a little bit of an outsider, you know, maybe like they're not totally mainstream, and they're looking to people like you because you're giving them insights, and they want to know who they are. So it's a very powerful thing to do. The past life that I looked at for you is it is kind of interesting that you. One thing that came up was you had amazing language skills. Now, it doesn't always follow, but you often find if you've learned a lot of languages in past lives, you're going to have some sort of facility for that. Usually it's a little bit easier to learn a foreign language if you need to. The life that I looked at, you started off in Hungary, and it was just after World War II. The point I came in was just after World War II, but you were at that point in your teens or late teens. You'd been orphaned, I think. There were no parents. You were institutionalized, which I would imagine back then was extremely brutal. Actually, it was a lot of abuse that went on, across the board abuse. Sexual, emotional, physical, and so a very, very harsh upbringing. And as soon as you were old enough, sometime in the 1940s, you just headed off. You wanted to explore the world. Like an exaggerated need for freedom after being, having a life that was so restricted. So, you ended up working on a cruise ship. You're like a waiter or something on a cruise ship, or an ocean liner or something like that. And you actually, I think that helped you to pick up languages. You seemed to do it very easily. You had Hungarian, French, German, Portuguese, and Spanish. English. Wow. And so, it's a lot for a young man. At that point, you weren't even 20. So I don't know how fluent you were, but it was something where you certainly had that skill. You ended up in Portugal, and you actually, because of the very limited upbringing, your soul was very much wanting to do a lot and to go places. Unfortunately, you died in a car crash in Portugal when you were, I think, only 21, 22. You're pretty young at the time. And when somebody has died prematurely like that, it creates a fear of failure. And in this life, what it feels like is you've got to be doing a lot. You want to make a difference.
I feel
there's
that.
Pressure on you to do that. Yeah. Especially for a lot of people when they hit 40, that's around the time the soul's really kind of pushing through to make sure you're doing what you're meant to be doing. The biggest problem for a lot of people is figuring out what the heck it is. What am I supposed to be doing? I know there's something.
Yeah.
But it's often that feeling of making up for lost time because your past life was it was curtailed so early. So a busy life. Does it feel like a busy life? I should have asked you.
It's interesting, Ainsley, because a bit of the backstory, and this is how we met through Kelly Gores, who we're writing a book together. But and I'm 42 now, and I'd say definitely the last couple of years, but maybe within five, let's say, but for sure the last two or three years, there's just this feeling of almost like a inner higher knowing of like this. Like the purpose of like, this is the work I know I'm meant to be doing. And at the same time though, I'm not like fully there. I mean, I'm there, but it's not like, and when I say that, I mean, there's still actually quite a bit of other work that I do, to pay the bills and so forth. But like, there's certain projects that are so crystal clear on a knowing perspective. And that's probably where, maybe that's the fear of failure stuff coming up, like where I have probably the most amount of worry and anxiety. And a lot of the work that I do, ironically, maybe not so ironically, is to help us with the worry and anxiety and so forth, which is what I struggle with the most. So, yeah.
Well, so many people get into work because they are trying to heal themselves.
Yeah.
I mean, we say that about so many therapists are doing that because they're trying to they're trying to heal their own selves. So, it is about the biggest sort of chunk of clients I have is all around 37 to 43. It's all surrounding 40. I mean, over and over, it's what I'm seeing people, you know, in that very narrow band. And it is that point where the soul is saying, okay, we've got to be doing what we're meant to be doing. And when there is a fear of failure from a disappointing past life, it creates that anxiety about, oh my gosh, am I doing the right thing? Is this the right path? And also there can be things that show up. It actually shows up with you. There's a part of your soul is reluctant to embark on a path that might be wrong. So it can hold you back a little bit because you have to, it's almost like you need validation. You need to hear from another source, much as your inner knowing, but you need somebody like a psychic could tell you, yeah, this is what you're meant to do, Mark. Do it. Then that part of the soul kind of goes, okay, you know, let's make it happen. But it's all about the action part of you. It's the action part is that once you have that validation or times when you really, you know, this is what I'm meant to do, you're going to be unstoppable. But it's up to that point. The tendency to, there's something that shows up in the personality you've chosen where you do have a tendency to overthink things and second guess your intuition. I mean, there'll be lots of times when you look back that you intuitively knew it's the right thing to do, but you might have talked your way out of it or overthought it. It's just a tendency that,
and that probably shows up in past lives.
That more, it's a past life connection is that who you are is always based on what you've done before. So this very rational part of you, you might have lives as an academic or scientist or some or lawyer, somewhere where you've really had to use your mind. So all of this gets turned into soul types, these archetypes that are based on whatever you've done in past lives. You've actually had a lot of lives as a healer, interestingly. And that doesn't mean you have to be a healer in this life. All it means is that you do have always you're going to have an underlying desire to improve people's lives, make a difference to others. And what you're doing right here, right now is, I think, a really good example of that. And also wanting to make sure, because of how old your soul is, you want to make sure that you're not wasting time. You know, like,
I feel
you're doing
that.
A job, particularly a job that you don't enjoy, but because a lot of people, they get stuck, they get trapped in work they don't really like. I mean, so many people complain about their jobs, but it can be hard. Once you're in it, it's hard to get out of it, and often for them, it's like figuring out, oh well, what is better, you know. But it's a spiritual soul type is what it's called, and for somebody like you, it's never enough to say, well, I get paid. It's, you know, that's good enough. It's always got to be a feeling that you're fulfilling some kind of higher purpose, that whatever you do in this life feels really meaningful to you. There's also, there's a creative aspect to what you do. And that's all about freedom because you want to be able to think creatively. I'm sure you don't need me to tell you this, but being micromanaged would absolutely just kill you. It's like your soul would not ever thank you for getting into a situation like that, because you need to have the freedom to be able to think for yourself and make your own decisions. Basically creative thought. So, and most people like you are but I'd say self-employed or very close to being self-employed, because that way you do get the freedom to be able to follow your own path and do your own thing. But you certainly, and especially after you being incarcerated in the early part of that past life, it's always associated with a past life fear of powerlessness. And the motto of anybody with that fear is, don't tell me what to do. Because if you might have noticed this, if somebody asks you to do something, it's okay. But if they tell you to do something, if they order you to do something, it's a trigger. It kind of gets your hackles up because it's a reminder of a past life where you had no personal freedom. You were told what to do all the time.
Interesting.
So yeah, I mean, you can break it down. There's so many ways of breaking down, you know, what you're here to do. You are here to learn to lead and to use your authority. That's a big part of your life plan as well. Mm. Oh, and
like,
writing.
How do you?
I was going to say, your writing that shows up as well. It's also the intellectual part too, but it's very definitely what your soul wants to do by writing is leave a legacy, create a ripple effect of some kind. It's called the desire for immortality. True. Yeah. But writing a book is a great way to do that.
Well, it's interesting because like I said, I mean, I don't feel like the first half of my life was at all any kind of a waste. Cause I mean, I just wasn't I'd say that 10 years ago wasn't doing really anything that I'm doing present day. But I've always viewed that as, you know, it's quite helpful in a lot of the speaking that I'm doing and so forth, and having a lot of insight into the business world, I guess I could say. But it's, again, especially the last 5 years, I'm always so drawn to, you know, documentaries about musicians or artists and so forth. And because I feel like I have to be entrepreneurial just to be able to do this and have, you know, there's a business part to it. But that's not, you know, in a perfect world, I would love to just have someone, you know, completely managing all of that. And I can sit here and actually do the creation part, right? Like that, I can feel like even preparing for this conversation, or I already feel it now. Like as soon as we're done, like I'm in a flow state after chats like this. It's just, there's nothing that compares to it, right? And it's,
absolutely.
So yeah, it's been fun having that because you can feel it, you know, the that inner knowing, which I don't think I've had that before. And it's just, I guess living, and this is my question for you, whether that's for me or for other people that you work with, it's when you get to that point of feeling it in your body and like knowing, okay, this is the path. But then I think there's like an element of patience, because then you live in the world outside that doesn't always align or feels chaotic or whatever it is, right? There's uncertainty and so forth. Like, how do we live and operate from a place of knowing, but with also within the reality of that we don't always have the answer to actually pursue that path? You know what I mean? Does that make sense?
Yeah, okay. Of course. It's
that's,
very,
I guess
very
that's
hard
your third question. How do you navigate life on Earth?
That's it. Yeah. It's a real challenge because you're here to express who you are. But you're almost, it's a battle against the system, if you like, because one thing I get from the spirit world a lot, we've had a lot of conversations about this, is that the world was never meant to be the way it is. We've got this massive inequality. We've got, corporations running everything. There's so much less opportunity for people to really manifest who they truly are than there might have been before. You know, often the spur guys talk about going back to the tribe for understanding, you know, thousands of years ago. It doesn't mean going back to tribal living. What it means is that we had societies where everybody had a function. There were 10 soul types. And, you know, we're talking about the creator in you, for example. So every community had those people, the jewelry makers or the cave painters or whatever they were. Yeah. Everybody had a purpose. What we have now is a system that puts square pegs into round holes and forces people to live lives that are a struggle very often. And it's not conducive. The system was created by young souls to their advantage. I mean, you see what's happening recently with Elon Musk becoming a trillionaire. I mean, that's just, and people, I mean, I cannot believe that people are going, oh, good for him. Well, Jesus Christ, you know, you wouldn't find old, really old souls saying that. But, you know, he represents, I think, a lot of what's wrong in the world. And so there's a lack of understanding who we really are. I mean, you'll see it in the school system where, you know, I grew up this way, like in this cookie cutter kind of system. I went to school in Scotland, and you know, ridiculous things like, you know, I'm incredibly comfortable with anything creative, but my God, having to do math and science was absolutely murder for me. And I mean, I know the arguments about we need to have a well-rounded education, but it was not, it wasn't for me. And I see this with so many other people that we get forced into the system that is not really allowing us to express our individuality. And then we lose touch with who we are. I mean, so many people who should, you know, they're never going to thrive in the corporate world or in certain kind of, you know, industries or areas, are forced to spend their lives kind of just to survive, really. If we had a better understanding, I think, of the individuality and or what makes us all, you know, who we are, I think it would be a very, very different world right from the start, right from school right through to the workplace. And it's not just about that as well. You in relationships, you get so many people who, you know, it's like they don't know themselves. So, and if you don't know who you are, how are you going to know what relationship is best for you? It tends to, for a lot of people, just be a question of just first one comes along or first one that shows interest in you, rather than, you know, selecting somebody who's going to be really good for the person that you are. Same with whatever it is, jobs, whatever you're doing in this life, even your hobbies and interests, we should be feeding who we are. Now, a lot of the problem too is the expectations of others. Like, well, I mean, it could be cultural, but it could be also parents or teachers. So when you, gosh, so many people I've worked with, I work with a lot of physicians, and I'm thinking of like doctors who were told, well, you're smart, you should be a doctor. One I worked with years ago, he wanted to be a chef. And they went, oh no, you know, you're the first one in the family to be smart enough or get the opportunity to go to college, and you're really clever. You got to be a doctor. And he was a doctor, and he was unhappy the whole time. When he retired, he became a chef. That was what he always wanted to do. Yeah.
So just on that though, I mean, I guess I have two questions that are trying to come out or on top of my mind. One being, given the world that we live in today, I guess how individually can we, again, approach it with maybe a little bit more ease and not be in such a struggle, and maybe a higher question. And I don't, maybe I'm not sure where you'll take this, but have you received any insight, or what, maybe personally, what are your thoughts? Like, are we on the verge? I feel like there's like a societal reset, you know, going to take place at one point, because it is so messed up in this, like it feels so like we've just, it just doesn't feel natural anymore. Like the world that we live in, it feels so artificial.
Absolutely. That's the word I'd use, artificial. And it's the growth and everything's unsustainable. You know, we can't keep operating like this. What I talked about in my second book, The Transformations, the shift in consciousness that we're going through as human beings right now. At the beginning, we were talking about how 55,000 years ago, we got this higher level of consciousness that allowed us to develop the way we have as a species. And that's great, but it's all going kind of haywire. You know, like it really was never meant to be this sort of way, you know, this patriarchy and all the stuff that we're dealing with, and this sort of, you know, corporate run world. It's not to the benefit of the majority at all. And so what we're heading into, actually has already started, is a shift in consciousness. Again, this takes us to a higher stage of consciousness, and it will make a difference, sort of like a rising tide lifting all boats. It will make a difference to both young and old souls. It's what we're actually witnessing right now globally. I mean, particularly you can see it's very visible in the United States right now, but it is global. Is a resistance from younger, less experienced souls who don't understand they don't understand what they often term counterculture, or you know, anybody who's more concerned about, you know, others, woke, you know, somehow bad things, a bad thing to be concerned about other people and those less fortunate than yourself. I mean, that's just a way of justifying greed, which it's not to say all young souls are bad or greedy, whatever, but it is a young soul kind of view, a way to, you know, diminish the, empathy. But empathy is the goal. You know, we're here. You know, that's why we keep coming back. It's to learn that we're all connected and to develop empathy and compassion for others. So this shift in consciousness will make a big difference. But we're getting that sort of equal and opposite reaction right now. Young souls afraid of what they're seeing, and really sort of clamping down on dissent. Young souls don't like to be questioned. So it's why they are more in lockstep when it comes to their beliefs. You'll see this with, you know, older souls who tend to be more progressive. Like they see the world in shades of gray. Younger souls see it all black and white, and them and us. And so that shift in consciousness will change things, but it's not going to happen overnight. It's going to take a while. And, you know, a lot of people are asking me right now, well, what do we do to survive? Because, you know, this is just a scary world. And the important thing is for compassionate, caring older souls to be there for each other, to help one another, to kind of band together. And we need to support each other in this, through this whole experience, especially those of us like you and me, where I was talking about having this fear around rejection from a past life where you've been abandoned. You know what it's like to be alone. Maybe you're abandoned by your mother. Maybe you died alone. But you know what it's like to feel like you don't fit in or something like that. And this is the effect of rejection. And so it becomes so important that we do help others to feel that way. For you having a landing place here for people to come and learn things. I mean, it's absolutely wonderful. You're creating this incredible community. But I think it's a very important thing for older souls to become part of something. We should all be, in our way, whatever way is appropriate for us, we should be working to improve the world, help others in some sort of way, even if it's small. But doing something rather than nothing. And if we can come together, we can have a lot more power than if we're trying to do things individually.
So just, I guess, maybe coming back to you personally, just knowing what you know and all the work that you've done, I guess, how do you flow through the present day world, and what kind of questions do you still pose that are maybe unanswered that you're exploring and keep you curious and so forth?
Well, that's it's an interesting question because I have access to the spirit world, and I described it recently as being like, as having like the key to this store with, it's an infinite sort of store of knowledge, if you like. You know, I'm just one guy, and I've got a lot fewer years ahead of me than I have behind me. And so how I'm trying to navigate things, I want to keep learning, and I want to share that with the world, you know. So I'm never going to stop working. I don't think. I mean, people ask me, you know, I'm at that age where people say, are you retired? And I go, holy cow, that's the last thing I want to do. I feel like I've got so much to do. It's actually a fear of failure too. Although I've worked through it, there's still so much that I got to do, big mission of exploration, things that all show up in my life plan. So I want to keep learning new things and getting it out into the world, you know, blog posts and videos and interviews and so on. For me, it's about sharing. I also, how I navigate this crazy world is like, for me, it's really important. Friends, family, connecting with others. And so I've always been a social animal. Again, this is something that's chosen before I came into this world. Where you are on the whole introvert-extrovert spectrum is all chosen before you come here. And I'm all about people. So for me, it's important for me to connect with friends and again, feel, get over any kind of sense of isolation. So community, I would say, is for most people, this is really important, even if it's not like the biggest focus of your life, but it's almost everyone I talk to needs more community than they've actually got. And especially, I mean, it's a search always for kindred spirits, because you're not going to get anything out of a community that doesn't speak to you. I mean, it's like I'm talking about sort of old souls. Most people I work with are spiritualist soul types. They're going to meet their people at spiritual retreats or yoga classes or something like that, more than, I don't know, the NASCAR race or something like that. Whereas, younger souls are probably going to find their people more there. But it's just, I can't stress this enough. Right at this point that we're in, this, where the world is just going crazy, it's about making sure that you're not isolated and going through it alone, because that stresses people out. They're reading the news, they're going, oh my God, like, we're going to hell in a handbasket. And but it's important to sort of talk to other people and try and put things in perspective and make sure you feel like you're not going through this alone.
Yeah. Just, I'm conscious of time, of course. So maybe a couple of final questions, but the one that comes to mind is, of course, I encourage everyone to pick up any of your books, frankly, and your work. And if they can, I mean, you're one person, of course, but if they can work with you directly, but for those who maybe can't, is there, or maybe don't have such a direct line, I guess, to, some of these spirit guides, like any counsel or any advice to those to tap into some of that, maybe more of that intuition, or like, I guess what's some of the guidance there? Because I think we all have cues. It's we may not see them or act on them.
Yeah. There are different ways of helping to develop your intuition. Of course, we're all slightly different. But there are certain things that are really important that I'd recommend to anybody. One is to review your life and look for those times when your gut feeling about someone or a situation was right, even if you chose to ignore it. Because it's amazing how many times people will go back and they'll look, I knew I shouldn't have got involved with that person, or I knew that job wasn't right, or whatever that situation was. But we don't always reflect on that. And if you do go back, you might find like a dozen times that you are so glad that you paid attention to your gut feeling, or you ignored it. And looking back, you wish you'd paid attention. And then the other thing is to journal. Journaling helps most people, because for most of us, and especially somebody like you, you've got that very intellectual center as well as all the other stuff, the very spiritual and creative
stuff.
That's
how this podcast started, by the way, Inslee. It came out of a journaling platform I had created.
Is that right? Oh, my gosh. Yeah. Well, if you're, for most people who have some, especially if you have that more intellectual center, the tendency is to hold everything in there, in your hand. And if all these thoughts and are just swirling around, this it creates this chaos, and it becomes much harder for you to hear the voice of your spirit guides, or which is your intuition. Your intuition is the voice of your spirit guides, and so. If you can start getting things down on paper and coming to some sort of an analysis with things, questions that maybe you've been thinking about for ages, get it down on paper, put a line underneath it, and move on. It frees up the mental hard drive for you to be more able to hear the small, still voice of your intuition, your spirit guides.
Yeah. So helpful. So helpful. Gosh, I mean, we could go on for probably another hour, but I want to respect your time.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll do a part two at one point. But any final thoughts or messages you'd love to leave us with?
Well, I think because things are really very, very stressful for so many people on the planet right now with all that's happening. I mean, we got like, particularly, most of the people I work with are here in the States where I am. And this is a really interesting thing. So many souls that, or people I work with, have had past lives in Central Europe or Russia or somewhere like that, in the build-up to World War II, the rise of fascism in Europe. And those people are the ones who are freaking out most about what's happening politically and socially in the States, because it's analogous, and they're able to extrapolate where a lot of people aren't. We all have a normalcy bias, and we have to have a normalcy bias, otherwise we'd be going nuts. We have to expect that tomorrow is going to follow on from today. But these people are able to see that things could change like overnight.
Yeah.
And they have done for certain people. I forget, was it Kansas or somewhere, just overnight just withdrew driver's licenses for trans people. So those who have had past lives where they saw this kind of thing are getting very stressed out. And what I would say to anybody who's, starting to freak out about all that's going on, and quite rightly, by the way, there's nothing. Yeah, we should be alarmed. This is five alarm stuff. Is again, community. Find other people who see the world the same way you do, think the same way you do. Just try as much as possible not to go through this experience alone. It is such a tendency. There's certain fears, these past life fears, that cause us to isolate. There's more than one. And it's actually, for with each of those fears, the way to overcome them is to make sure you don't do that, and to have community and belonging. And whether you just join a group to support others, and it could feel your way through it, whatever speaks to you. Again, it depends on what's in your soul types, but for some it could be there's people who go into and I see you places and hug babies, and but we can support people in all sorts of ways. Ideally, we should all be supporting those who are most marginalized. Certainly, giving voice to the powerless is a very, very spiritual thing to do. It's a spiritual act, but at the very, very least, belong. And if you can belong to some organization or group that's trying to improve with a lot of others, that's even better. It's great karma. Your soul will thank you in the next life.
I see no downside to doing that.
No downside at all. Everybody benefits. Yeah.
Right. Oh, gosh. Ainsley, thank you so much. I mean, thank you for making time to come on the show. But I mean, of course, a higher thank you for the work that you do day in and day out. And I guess what comes to mind is you choosing not to not see your uncle in that bookshop. I don't think you could have that was possible, but I mean, he could have taken a different route. You could have been like, I'm not ready there. And for whatever reason, you followed that. And I mean, this, but the ripple effect of, and the ripple effect of what you do right now is especially in today's climate and world, I think is incredibly, incredibly impactful. Speaking of belonging and sticking together, so thank you.
Well, thank you so much for all you do, and thank you for having me on your show. I really enjoyed the conversation.